From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when I was 16 years old, working one of my first jobs. I worked in my local hardware store. I recall maybe half of my time was spent making duplicate keys. I loved that machine that would grind metal down to dust. I enjoyed helping customers find the right tools for their home projects. I learned how to install drywall. We called it sheetrock. It was a good job, but things have changed. Is your local small hardware store still open? Sure, you can find Home Depot or Lowe's. Nothing wrong with that. But what about the hardware store with local owners? Many are already gone. Those are the kinds of stores that have provided a kind of backbone for small towns and growing communities. I'm thinking of stores like Knapp and Schlappy in Penn Yan, stores like that. The Landmark Society has just released its annual list called The Five to Revive. These are five historical sites or institutions that need saving or reviving or funding or community support or all of the above. And on the list this year is the community hardware store, the kind I've been describing. But that's just one on the list of five. Let's dig into the full list with our guests for the hour. And let me welcome now Wayne Goodman, Executive Director of the Landmark Society of Western New York. Wayne, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much, Evan.
Brad Huber is a member of the Five to Revive Committee. Brad, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
We're gonna welcome other guests throughout the hour who are going to kind of take us to the various places that are on the list. But I wanted to start with hardware stores because I think this is so relatable, Wayne, to so many people thinking in their community. I mean, it happened to be a place of one of my first jobs. But most people can remember going to a small store and having that connection, you know, doing a weekend project. And I'm curious to know how this one ended up on your radar to begin with.
Well, you know, I guess from a thematic listing, it's one of my favorite, thematic listings that we've included on the list in the past 8 years. And as a matter of fact, I think when the discussion began at the committee level, I believe it was actually Brad who came up with this idea. The reason why I think I like it so much, and Brad might have some interesting thoughts as well, is that it's not a typical listing in the sense that it's an isolated property that we're working to advocate for. It's a resource. Many of these local hardware stores are housed in historic buildings, but some of them aren't. And the services that these provide not only anchor their neighborhoods, their districts, but they also provide, as you point out, a valuable service to people who are trying to restore their own homes. So it's certainly a resource that we see dwindling. It's not that there isn't room, obviously, for the Lowe's and the Home Depots of the world, but the small hardware stores not only provide the materials, but they provide a level of expertise that's quite helpful that we're concerned is disappearing.
What was it that put it on this list to begin with, though, Wayne? Because, I mean, it's so interesting to me how you and Brad and the whole team will put together annual lists. You get submissions from all around the region. How come this year was the year that the hardware store ended up there? Was there anything specific?
No, I don't think there was anything specific. I think that whenever the topic was thrown out on the table and the committee really started batting it back and forth, the thing that really resonated was, I think, the fact that these hardware stores are not only stores that occupy a specific building, but they're a resource, and they're also really important to our neighborhoods. And when we are talking about revitalizing our neighborhoods and some of our commercial districts, we feel like that the neighborhood hardware store is a valuable resource that we should all work together to try and support in our community.
Brad, how do you see this one?
Well, I agree with what Wayne is saying, but I'll also add that I think that, you know, to build on what you did on the last hour, that these local hardware stores are really important to the local economy, and that the contributions that they make there are important. But there's also an idea that hardware stores are sort of a touch point for a lot of different people. And I think one of the things that we try to drive home is that there's multiple ways to become a preservationist. You don't have to live in an old house or restore an old building to be a preservationist, but anybody can visit or shop at a local hardware store. And in that way, you're also sort of being a preservationist.
I like that idea. you know, in a sense, it's really the roots of the DIY community, which maybe leads you down the road to kind of doing the work the Landmark Society is doing. We're talking to Wayne Goodman and Brad Huber. Wayne is the executive director of the Landmark Society of Western New York. Brad's a member of their Five to Revive committee. By the way, Brad, how do you describe the mission of the Five to Revive for people who are just new to the work there?
Well, a lot of the times we try to consider a lot of different things. But one of the biggest things that we are looking at is a potential for a catalytic impact. So we don't just put any sort of building on this list, but we think about where is this attention going to be best spent. And so I think that's one of the things that really sets this part, this list apart from sort of like some type of regular old endangered list. These are buildings or ideas or themes that we think are going to be really, really impactful. And that's why we want to put the spotlight there.
Yeah. And so, Wayne, before we move to some of the others, just on the subject of hardware stores, if it's on the list of Five to Revive, what does that mean? I mean, there's not a single store that you can point to. Is this just an effort to sort of, on a grassroots level, remind people that these are stores that need support, that are sort of on the endangered list for a reason?
Exactly. Yeah, I think that this is much more so of a promotional listing to remind people of the critical role that these hardware stores play in our community and in our neighborhoods. You know, Brad mentioned the economic impact. You know, years ago, when I was working in the Midwest, I was in a committee meeting, and it's ironic that this hardware store concept came up years ago. And I remember someone saying, there's nothing wrong with the Home Depots, but when you buy a hammer at Home Depot, the profits get on an airplane and they fly somewhere else. Here at the local hardware stores, those profits stay in our community, and it helps benefit the community. So it's really a multi-pronged focus on this listing, and I think it's one of our more interesting listings that we've had.
Yeah, and if I could just sort of build on that, your colleague and our friend Larry Francer mentions on the skilled trades, which is something that the Landmark Society has focused on, that you're finalizing a partnership with SUNY Geneseo, Genesee Country Village, a museum, Perry Main Street, the Landmark Society, offering 3 1 credit courses through SUNY Geneseo, which will be taken individually or combined during their intersession in January 2021 on careers in and in the history of the preservation field. So do you see some symmetry there with the focus on skilled trades?
Oh yeah, no doubt. And we have over the past several years been happy to be a part of some momentum on the traditional trades. That was a listing, as you know, that was several years ago when we called attention to the trades, and the feedback that we've had has been remarkable over the past several years. There's an incredible amount of interest for people who want to get started in the trades, but not a lot of knowledge and about where to acquire the training. And to be honest, there hasn't really been a lot of training provided. So we're excited to offer this class, preservation and traditional trades class through SUNY Geneseo. And if people want more information about that, as you mentioned, Larry Francer, they can go on our website at landmarksociety.org. Or contact Larry Francer here at the Landmark Society.
Landmarksociety.org is the website. And our producer, Megan Mack, is going to share on social media and Twitter especially some pictures of the Five to Revive that we're talking about this hour with Brad Huber, Wayne Goodman, talking about their Five to Revive 2020 list. Local hardware stores was the first one that we mentioned. I want to bring in a couple of guests to talk about the next one on the list. George Fontenette's the member of the Clarissa Street Reunion Committee, and we've always enjoyed the conversations with the Fontenettes. George, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Evan. Good evening. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. Yes, indeed. And Brianna Williams is a Teen Empowerment Youth History Ambassador. Bree, nice to have you again as well. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thank you.
Well, Wayne and Brad, you want to introduce why Clarissa Street is on the list here? Tell us a little bit about the Clarissa Street corridor. I guess I'll start with Wayne. You want to jump on that one?
Sure. Yeah, I think that Clarissa Street has been on our radar for a number of years. And given the incredible level of history and significance that this corridor has, particularly in our African-American community, I think this was this was almost an automatic for this year's list. I should mention that when we talk about adding properties or resources to the list, as Brad pointed out, we really think of what might be the catalytic impact. But we also focus on the significance of the resource, a potential threat, the level of local engagement and support. And we have been incredibly impressed by the work, particularly with Teen Empowerment and the Reunion Committee. And we feel like that this listing had almost every single criteria that we use to evaluate these listings.
So, Brad, do you mind if I ask you a little bit about this before we kick it to George and Bree? Go ahead, Brad.
I agree there, too, that, and I think that this is really another example of preservation not just being about one individual building, that it's really about, that preservation can be about environmental and the social fabric of the community, and that there was, like Wayne was saying, such work going on already over there, that this was a really great opportunity for Landmark Society to come in and say, how can we support the community in their vision, rather than the way that preservation is thought of sometimes as an outside force coming in and telling you what to do with your property.
Well, and, you know, sometimes what to add to that, sometimes what we're saving, as I think Brad is getting at, is we're saving maybe a sense of place. We're saving a power of place. And in Clarissa Street, we have some buildings that do remain, but there's also a lot of work to be done potentially with infill, and I think interpreting that history and reviving that history.
Yeah, and I know that our guests on the line, George and Bree, have a lot to share about that. George, let me start with you. Why don't you remind our listeners, for those who haven't heard the conversations with you in the past, where Clarissa Street is and just a little bit of the history.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I want to thank the Landmark Society for honoring Clarissa Street. It was such a unique area. Everything was in walking distance in that area. You know, you could be born near Clarissa Street at Rochester General, which was on Portland Avenue. You could be baptized at Memorial Amy Zion, Mount Olivet, or Immaculate Conception Church. And you could attend school at either Number 3 School or Immaculate Conception. You could get married at one of the churches, and then you could walk down to either the Gibson Hotel or the Elks Club for a reception. And, you know, you could also go to your doctor. You could walk there, Dr. Jordan and Dr. Lunsford. And you could also go to college at RIT. So, you know, and not to mention all the clubs we had, the restaurants, and, of course, the famous Pithod. You know, so we had all these things. And then, last but not least, you could also have your funeral on Clarissa Street. We had the largest, longest running black-owned business on Clarissa Street, which is called the Latimer Funeral Home. So we have so many things on Clarissa Street that, you know, that we, the elders, always walk down and think about all the time.
And so, Bree, the reason I really want to hear your voice on this is I've heard some of the things you've said and read some of your comments, and it can be heartbreaking because so much of what George is talking about is what Clarissa Street in the corridor was in the Rochester past. But as you said, if you don't mind, I want to read some of what you've had to say, and I want you to talk a little bit about this. This is what you had to say out on the steps of the Flying Squirrel. You said, "I'm tired. Because the same blocks that we walk today feel like pit stops for no change. And no, I don't live in poverty. And no, I'm just not another angry black teen. Or am I? Because back then they had Clarissa Street. The Pithod was the place to be. Rochester's Broadway was like a black Wall Street. No black-on-black crime. We had black-owned businesses. But we could never live happily. Because once they'd seen us living our best lives, they destroyed it in the name of urban renewal." End quote. That is really hard to hear, Bree, but it's also reality. So when you think about what the Landmark Society is trying to do with the Five to Revive, what do you see as sort of doable? What is the future of Clarissa Street as you want to see it, Bree?
Honestly, that quote right there was just like the main purpose of the whole piece, because it's just like, on Clarissa Street back then, they had everything. They were like an ideal community. It's like what we need today. And I feel like it's affecting youth today because we don't have that sense of unity. We don't have that sense of happiness in, like, just one area. And, like, for them to, like, just come in and take that away from them as they were just living their best lives, like, the policies and the covenants just came in and, like, took that away from them after nothing was doing wrong, after they wasn't doing anything wrong. I don't see how it was, you know, such a huge problem, but, you know, urban renewal came in and everything changed. And I feel like for Five to Revive, I just want, like, some sense of, like, that memory to come back into present day so, like, the youth, so they can experience the same thing they did, like, just have a sense of place where we can feel safe and, like, just not only have to worry about our safety, but, like, having Black owned businesses today would, like, inspire so many youth like me to, like, start our own businesses so, like, the future can be better than the present. And in order for us to have a great future, we're just going to have to start with the change now and fix it.
Bree, are you an optimist that that future is achievable?
Yes, sure I am. Because, you know, I can't do it myself. It's like, it's not a one-man job, but, you know, with the help of from the elders, the knowledge they have, and, like, with our energy of the youth, it's achievable, and we could do it.
George Fontenot, I imagine it breaks your heart a little bit to hear Bree's comments about the way that she views urban renewal and what happened to the Clarissa Street corridor and the loss of all of that identity that you talked about. I'd love to hear from you. How do you feel hearing her describe her emotions in that way? And then, George, do you think that some of that can be recaptured or recreated?
Yes. You know, I was asked one time, how do you feel about your old neighborhood being torn down? When I hear people talk about they could go back and visit where they used to live at, their old homestead, you know, we don't have that. There's only four buildings that are remaining in that area on Clarissa Street. There's the Flying Squirrel, which was the Elks. There's the Dan's Tavern, which is called Clarissa Room. Dan's House, which is right next door to where I lived at. And there's one house left at 325 Clarissa Street. That's the only house that is still there from the old neighborhood. The family who owned that house still owns that house. It's the Buckley family. And I asked one of them, the family members, how did your parents end up keeping your house? He said, my father had the money to pay the lawyers. So that's how we kept our house. And I was surprised to hear that. So it's only four remaining structures on that street that was there from my youth.
Wow. But what can happen? What's the future that's realistic there?
Well, you know, as of now, you know, every year we have the Clarissa Street reunion. And as you know, with the pandemic coming back for this year, you know, we couldn't do it. But I just want to go back one point, how much Clarissa Street means to the people who live there. When they called us to take the picture for the Five to Revive, we had 10 members come out of the reunion committee, of the original reunion committee. Six of those members were over 80 years old, and they came down. One guy rode his bike down there just to be part of the picture. So, you know, that area meant so much to so many people. And but now with the pandemic going on, the focus of our reunion committee might have to change to a shift to the to different projects to keep the awareness of the neighborhood, places, and organizations. So we're meeting now just to discuss those kind of things, but we haven't really had a good chance to meet in person because of the pandemic.
Sure, I take the point. Well, there's a lot of work to do there, and before I let them go, Wayne Goodman, you know, as we talk about the Five to Revive list, every building or every institution or every corridor on your list is a little different, and putting it on the Five to Revive means different things. For Clarissa Street, what do you want to see happen to make it a successful member of your Five to Revive listings over the years, Wayne?
Well, I think that the history that both George and Bree mentioned, I think first and foremost, that history needs to be captured and it needs to be interpreted and communicated. Secondly, I think that it is another very tangible and visible example in our city where urban renewal, for the most part, just did not work. And then I think that there needs to be a re-envisioning, and the reunion committee and teen empowerment are already underway doing that, and we're excited to work with them to try and re-envision what Clarissa Street could be and what the local neighborhood really wants it to become. And that's our goal. Our goal is to work hand in hand with the folks who live there.
Hey, George, I heard from somebody named Andre on Twitter who says, can't wait to hear my pops on Connections. Cornhill and Clarissa Street are staples in our Rochester community that need to be kept up by everyone. A loving note from your son, Andre, who we've talked to on this program as well. I just wanted to share that with you. And it's always nice talking to you, George. And George and Bree, good luck to both of you. You're doing such important work, and it's really beautiful and important for this community. Thank you, George. Thank you, Bree.
Thank you, Evan.
Wonderful stuff. We got to take our only break here, and when we come back, we continue down the list of the five to revive from the Landmark Society of Western New York. They're on the program today. It's landmarksociety.org, and we're going to tweet some pictures so you can take a look at some of the five to revive from 2020. Our guests include Wayne Goodman, the executive director of the Landmark Society. Brad Huber is a member of the Five to Revive committee, and we head to item number three after our only break. I'm Evan Dawson, Tuesday on The Next Connections. We look at bars and restaurants in the pandemic winter that's coming up. What should we expect? Are you going out to eat still? Are you going out to bars and restaurants for indoor dining or indoor service? They might be closed because of government order, or at least there are restrictions coming. But how can they survive it? What do they need from us? What do they need from Congress? We'll find out Tuesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The Landmark Society puts out their Five to Revive every fall, hoping that the community will coalesce around these efforts to breathe new life into certain buildings, historic sites, projects, sometimes entire areas, and sometimes large themes. One of the items that we just talked about on the list for 2020 is the local neighborhood hardware store. And Jason on Twitter writes to us to say, Myers Paint and Hardware, North Winton Village, they hosted Christmas parties for the neighborhood free annually. I still drive there when I need to talk to a person. Also, free popcorn when there's no COVID around. Thank you, Jason. That's great stuff. And a great example of exactly what Brad and Wayne were talking about with the local hardware stores. So the local hardware stores, neighborhood hardware stores on the list. We just talked about the Clarissa Street corridor. And next, I want to bring in Kim Brumber, who is coming to us from, well, at least from the mission of 6789 Canal Street. Hi, Kim. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Evan. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for making time. Wayne, I'll start with you. You want to take us through this next one?
Sure. This is just I think that this is an example of a property that the committee felt like just really had high potential for adaptive reuse. And this is the structure on Canal Street. There's also some exciting work that's starting to take place with East House and MM Development Advisors, who are working on a proposed redevelopment for the site. It's listing in the National Register of Historic Places, its location close to downtown. And then in addition to some of the work that's gone on around this building, including the Carriage Factory Apartments, which used historic tax credits several years ago. So we felt like, again, that it was a property that had a lot of catalytic impact, potentially, and quite meaningful as a historic structure.
It's listed in the National Register of Historic Places, right?
Correct.
Yep. Brad, you want to add to some of what Wayne characterized there? As you do that, by the way, we all ought to check out MMAC Media on Twitter. That's Megan Mack. She's posting pictures, and I'm looking at this building that I agree with everything Wayne just said, Brad. It sort of screams all kinds of potential in a lot of different directions.
Yeah, I agree. Like adaptive reuse is like the big thing here in terms of this building and how this building can be reutilized in a way that is meaningful to the community once again, especially under the lens of the adaptive and affordable housing that could be offered in this building and how that can serve our community today.
So, Kim, take me through how you see this particular property and what it means to be on this Five to Revive list.
Yes, we are. This is a big deal for our Canal Street project. So, you know, it makes sense to take a step back and remind everyone that East House is takes care of chronically ill individuals who are their illnesses are either mental illness or chronic substance use disorders. And we really use housing as that supportive hug that allows people to move to wellness by providing comfort, safety, support, care, encouragement, all those things. So then you take a look at a building like this where East House, if we're successful with the funding, will be able to place 123 what will be really, really well-done apartments in that building. And it'll be a mix. It'll be a mix of just outright affordable housing for individuals who income qualified to live there. But then there will be 8 units for chronically homeless people, 37 units for individuals diagnosed with mental illness, and 25 units for individuals diagnosed with substance use disorders. And then you add the last piece to that is that it makes a big difference to that neighborhood. It's one of the last structures that really is in, you know, pretty rough shape. I'm not sure which pictures you have up, but, you know, it's been vacant and dilapidated for a long time. So it'll also have immense neighborhood impact as well as on the lives of many individuals.
Kim, it was just about a week or two ago on this program that we talked to a team of individuals who work on affordable housing, and they've been part of the old carriage factory and what's happened there. They've been part of Upper Falls, and we talked about, in fact, producer Megan Mack and I took a tour of some of the property. And when you talk about the potential, as you describe it, on this particular building that's on the five to revive for 2020, when people hear affordable housing, you know, different units for people who are chronically homeless, they may have an outdated view of what that looks like. This is a gorgeous building. The bones are beautiful. It's obvious that the bones are beautiful. But what's the vision that you have for just the quality of what's possible in a place like that, Kim?
Well, this is why these projects are so important to us, is because we can control the quality of the overall construction and end product. We've done similar projects like this on State Street with Paul Wolk Commons and on Alexander Street with Alexander Commons. And these end up being very high-quality apartments. I would live in them. I'd put my mom in one of these apartments. I mean, they are just stellar when they're completed. And we have a top team of architects and planners and construction partners and Monica McCullough, our development partner. This will turn out to be an extraordinary project in the end.
So, Kim, before I let you go, this project made the list for 2020 for the Five to Revive. What does that actually functionally mean in the best case scenario? What happens next?
We are hopeful that it making the list really points out to the various partners at New York State who we need to align to fund this project. It's a big project. It's complex. It's costly. We hope that this really pushes it to for them to pay extra attention to this year so that we can finally get this project done.
Brad, is that realistic?
I hope so.
Yeah, Wayne, I mean, the track record of Five to Revive has got a lot of success. So what do you think is the best case here?
Yeah, I think that it's very realistic. As we look back in the history of our Five to Revive over 8 years of putting together the list and then prioritizing these properties each year for our staff, I think we have a fairly successful track record of not only bringing these properties up for larger community debate and discussion, but also the listings seem to leverage different forms of investment, both public and private. So I don't really see why Canal Street would be any different. It's a large structure. It has an open floor plan. It's really avails itself for excellent reuse. And it also, I think, stands as a great example of where our buildings are not and should not be these static monuments to the past. What they should be are living components that we breathe life back into to help them sort of stabilize a broader organic neighborhood. And this, I think, is a again, is a great example of where that's possible. And I think the chances are good.
Kim, good luck to you. Thanks for making time for the program.
Thank you for having us. Greatly appreciated.
It's the Five to Revive, the 2020 list from the Landmark Society of Western New York. Their executive director, Wayne Goodman, is on the line with us. Brad Huber is a member of the Five to Revive committee that has to make the determination every year, looking all across the region. And the next guest, speaking of across the region, is Dave Sierczynski, who is going to be talking about the Attica Opera House. And David is on the line with us now. David, thanks for making time for the program. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Wayne Goodman, lead us off here. The Williams Opera House in the village of Attica in Wyoming County. Tell us about it.
Sure. Just a beautiful building in the village of Attica, imposing, I would say, in a great way. Located on Exchange Street, right in the historic district, it's probably the most impressive architectural building in downtown Attica. Unfortunately, there was some wind damage. The back wall collapsed. I think that's largely been stabilized now. But particularly in small villages across our region, historic preservation can be an incredible, I think, boost to the vitality in neighborhoods and in commercial districts. So we feel like that this is an example of that.
Brad, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I will. And I think that one of the other reasons that we really liked this property was because we've seen other such success stories in the village of Attica, particularly the Citizens Bank building and the Attica Auto building down on Main and Market Street have shown that this type of work is possible, and it has a positive impact to the streetscape and the community.
All right. So I'm looking at a picture that Megan Mack has posted on Twitter. And David, if you could, tell me a little bit more about the Williams Opera House and how you see the value to the community there.
So, like they had talked about, we've had some success with these programs in the past. In fact, my office is in the Attica Auto building, so I get to live the success of these buildings. The Opera House is by far the most impressive building in Attica historically and in recent history. It's just a beautiful building, Romanesque building. It's got a lot of character, but over the years, unfortunately, these buildings take time and money to preserve. This building really wants to be a spot that people can come to. The owner, Sage Kieber, had some ideas of doing music venues there, as well as some commercial space, opening up commercial space again in the lower level. A lot of the plaster work in the old balcony is still there, which would allow us to do things, take molds and recreate some of that, which we would love to be able to do, bring back some of that historic character inside the building. But unfortunately, in January, it took a pretty good hit with the windstorm. Luckily, I check on the building anytime we have winds. And the winds that we've had recently have not done any more damage to the building. We were able to put in some shoring from the basement all the way to the top of the building in January and get that stabilized. So the building's, fairly healthy, staying fairly dry inside, and the winds aren't putting a lot of stress on the building. So we're hoping that, we can now get in there and start doing some reviews of the building structurally to see what we need to do to save this beautiful structure.
Yeah, built in 1879. David, can you indulge some ignorant questions from the host on this? Because I'm fascinated.
Absolutely.
I'm fascinated by this building. But what is the population of the village of Attica?
Unfortunately, I do not know that question. There are a couple thousand people.
Yeah, right. Okay. So yeah. It's a few thousand people, right?
Yeah.
Right, I'm looking at this building going, this was built in 1879. Was it at a time when the idea was that Attica would end up being larger or that it would be sort of the sustainable opera house and a regional attraction? I'm trying to think of what maybe the initial mission would be to create something in this beautiful Romanesque style. Do you know about that?
So the history of this is because we had the railroad coming through here and it was a destination for people to stop. Because of our beautiful valleys and And back in the day, you know, there was a lot of traffic through Attica this way. So there's the hotel was just a couple doors down. And then we had the Skage House, which came later, right along the railroad. So this building is actually only a stone's throw from the railroad, about 100 or 200 feet from the railroad. So people would come in historically by stagecoach or by railroad to the Opera House, which was operated, you know, as an entertainment venue. And then in the 50s, it turned into a bowling alley. A lot of the people that are still around remember that. And it's interesting because the building itself in 1879, when it was built, it only cost $35,000, right? When we think of that, today we buy vehicles for more than that. Mm. And, you know, today we need that much money just to be able to do the studies on the building and understand where we are to get this building back into its original glory.
Absolutely. See, I knew I asked the right person. So, David, before I let you go then, I mean, ideally here, this is a building, as you said, that in the 50s becomes a bowling alley. It has been, you know, a racquetball court. I mean, there's a lot that could end up happening there. What's the ideal scenario in 5 years when we go to the Williams Opera House? What's happening in that building?
So in 5 years, we're hoping that we'll be done with the structural repairs to the building, that we would have some storefront work, because that's the low-hanging fruit on the building, done, and people in their offices and or storefronts. And then inside the building, people would be able to go and take a tour and see how we're coming along with some of the recreation of some of the plaster work in the balcony area and what the stage is going to look like for some entertainment venues.
And then in 10 years, what's happening?
In 10 years, people are enjoying that beautiful balcony and stage area, listening to music, maybe seeing some plays, and then joining everybody down in the little bar cafe area and just talking about the wonderful shows or music that they just heard.
Yeah, remarkable vision there. It really is a beautiful building. Good luck. And David, what do you think comes out of this being on the Five to Revive? Will that help?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Landmark Society has had such a track record on this, and it opens us up to people at least looking at it and helping us find financing, grant opportunities, investors to help us make this dream come true, because it's a beautiful vision. It's a beautiful village. It's a beautiful building. And we just would love to have this here and just add to the attraction of coming into our wonderful little village and enjoying an evening with family and friends.
David Zirinsky is calling us, talking about the Williams Opera House in the Village of Attica in Wyoming County. David, thank you for making the time. Good luck on this project.
Thank you so much for your time, and thank you.
Yeah, I know. He's thanking the Landmark Society. Wayne Goodman, I sort of geek out on just learning about the history of why certain buildings were built in certain places. And, you know, Attica is not something that maybe you immediately assume is going to have a beautiful opera house like this, but it does.
Sure.
And I wonder, you know, if that really fits in what the mission of what you're doing here is, because a lot of people, we're going to finish in Rochester in just a moment, and we started in you know, sort of in Rochester, but what the Landmark Society has done over the years is cast this gaze all across the region, and I know this fits in that mission. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we try to certainly have a geographic variety of listings, because as a regional preservation organization, I think that the one thing that we understand quite well is that preservation as a factor in community and economic development works, and it works on different scales, whether it be in neighborhoods, villages, or in large metro areas like Rochester. So the work that David does and all of the other local supporters on the listings is so vital, because that's how the work is accomplished. You know, these opera houses were obviously much more readily available in our small villages and towns There's a great example in Medina where Roger Hungerford with Talus Equity is really re-envisioning the Bentz Opera House in the village of Medina, and it's currently under construction now. So anyway, it's a wonderful building, and it occupies a critical piece of Attica history, and we think that it will be a critical piece to Attica's future as well.
All right, one more on the list of five to revive from the Landmark Society of Western New York, and that's the Joseph Ave Arts and Culture Group, and I want to bring in David Pacific, who is on the line with us now. Hi, David. Thanks for making time for the program.
Hi, Evan. Thank you for having me here.
He's part of the Joseph Ave Arts and Culture Alliance. Wayne and Brad, I'm going to let you start on this one. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, this has been on our radar for quite some time. It's another example of a structure that is just simply beautiful. The architecture of the structure is breathtaking. It was once a integral part of the community on Joseph Avenue, and this is an example where we really need to work with the Joseph Avenue Arts and Cultural Alliance to really help them achieve their vision to make this a state-of-the-art performing arts center, which not only will perpetuate the building's life, but will be just a substantial investment in that neighborhood and community.
Brad, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I'll add that, you know, this is one of those properties that we've been looking at for a long time. The subsidiary organization of Landmark Society, the Young Urban Preservationists, have really been having this building as a topic. And one of the things that they've done is do a heart bombing activity. I think it was last year where we got folks from the neighborhood and the community to make Valentines for the building and post them up on the doors to sort of create a sense of care for this building and that it's not forgotten. And so this was just another opportunity for attention to be drawn to a unique structure, which could have an impactful movement on the community in a positive way.
I'm looking as we get David reestablished here. I'm looking at the building itself. It's just a really cool-looking building here. I don't know, Wayne, this one looks like it was almost like it's like a stereotype of screaming for preservation.
Yeah, I would agree. It's a building that needs considerable work, but it's also a building that's worth that effort. And not only is the building worth the effort, but it's as Brad pointed out, it's the neighborhood, it's the community, it's the people who live there. You know, preservation, we believe, is something that's meaningful and tangible to every single person in our community. And this is almost, I think, a perfect example of that.
I'm going to bring in David Pacific. And as I do that, I'm going to read the entry on this because this is some of the history of the building we're talking about, which you can see on Megan Mack's Twitter feed, MMAC Media. On Twitter to check out all the pictures here. This is a lot of cool ones. This might be the coolest looking building in the group this year. Located in Rochester's Northeast Quadrant, 692 Joseph Avenue was built in 1928 as the Congregation B'nai Israel Synagogue. The congregation left the building in 1961, and it has been vacant since. The Joseph Avenue Arts and Culture Alliance acquired the property in 2015 with plans to convert the former synagogue into a state-of-the-art center for performing and visual arts, providing free, equitable, and accessible world-class arts programming and educational events. This initiative and the request by the region's residents is what JACA was born out of and why free and ever-growing programming was begun ahead of the center's completion. The Arts and Culture Alliance has been actively fundraising and successfully providing quality arts programming to the community for years. However, the organization still faces significant and mounting rehabilitation expenses, especially during an economic crisis. David, tell us about this particular building and your own vision for it. That we admire the look of the building. Take me through what you're hoping to do there.
Sure. Well, at 692 Joseph, the history of the building is present throughout it, and that's the huge part of the integrity that we plan to maintain with revitalizing the structure. But itself is 11,000 square feet, and all 11,000 square feet of that building will be used for free and accessible programming, continuing our work in performing arts and education with our partners and leading institutions in the region. so as we see the building, we see it as being a centerpiece in the community and spurring years of economic development of what was once a critical corridor in the city and one of our oldest and most historical corridors in the city.
Well, I'm gonna let Bill in Rochester add to that, who's just called in, who I think is the vice president of the Arts and Culture Alliance. Hi, Bill.
How you doing, Evan? This is Bill Ferguson. I am the vice president of Joseph Evan Arts and Cultural Alliance.
Of course you are.
And as David, of course, as David said, we are very interested in seeing this place come to life for the people of the Joseph Avenue area. We want to make a place where everybody can come, get art, get culture. So it's not just an economic revitalization that we want for the Joseph Avenue area. We want a cultural revitalization and an educational revitalization. And well, I'll leave it at that.
Well, can you just as well, Bill, for those who haven't seen the picture yet, we were just talking to David and Wayne and Brad about this. It is a gorgeous-looking building. I mean, it really screams just character and culture to me.
It really does. It's one of a number of buildings that are in Rochester that, unfortunately, since I've been in Rochester since 1989, we've lost a lot of wonderful buildings like this. And I think it's a boon and a feather in the cap of Joseph Avenue Arts and Cultural Alliance that we saved this building, you know, because it speaks to the history of Rochester. It's been here through a number of events that have occurred here in Rochester, and it adds to the landscape and the depth of what Rochester is and where Rochester is going,
awesome.
Not only economically, but socially.
That's the ubiquitous Bill Ferguson. Always good, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
Really great stuff.
Good work, David.
Yeah, there you go. And so, David, and to kind of build on Bill's point here, what is now possible being on this list? What does it mean to the organization to be on the Five to Revive list of 2020?
Well, where we stand right now, I mean, the Five to Revive is an enormous honor, and we hope it brings a new kind of attention to the project. You know, we've been seeing results with people in the community, just as Bill said, for years. I mean, there's an outpouring of support. We know we have an audience there, and everything that we do is free for everybody to attend. So we hope that Five to Revive is our last step in the kind of fundraising that we need to complete the project. I mean, we have everything in place with our blueprints and our developer, and the project is ready to go, but we need the funding there to take this historic building. I mean, it was once built by people, and it can be reborn by people again.
Before I let you go now, why not do what you want to do in a different building? Why this one?
I think there's two reasons for that. I mean, the building itself is historic. It is a piece of our region's history, and it's worth revitalizing. And the second part is that it really is in the heart of the Northeast Quadrant. I mean, that spot, that location, that place, this was a place where people walked, where they came to. It is a centerpiece. So in this space, preserving the history that's in there but transforming it for the future, that's our whole goal.
Good luck to you, David. Thanks for making the time for the program and sharing more about this historic building.
All right. Well, thank you, Evan.
That's David Pacific from the Joseph Ave Arts and Culture Group. And I want to mention before we lose the program today, just a couple of things here. If you want to check out all five on the Five to Revive list, producer Megan Max got photos up so you can see them, read a little bit of the history, and learn about them. Also want to make sure that you know that Bree from Teen Empowerment, who was on the program earlier, wanted to make sure that we mention that their Clarissa Uprooted documentary can still be seen on the Little Theater's Facebook videos, and the Little Theater partnered with them to show that earlier this year. Clarissa Uprooted, if I remember correctly, is 20 to 25 minutes long and really worth checking out. So thank you, Bree, for that, and the whole Teen Empowerment team doing such great work in the Clarissa Street corridor. You've heard all five now. Wayne, realistically, how difficult is this work of preservation and revitalization in the pandemic? Has it changed your work at all?
Well, I mean, it's difficult on a good day. And certainly the pandemic has made it more difficult, but certainly within reach. And we owe that to people, well, like people like Brad, who are volunteers with the Landmark Society and who do such important work We owe it to our funders. We owe it to people that we've spoken to today who are doing the grassroots work in their neighborhoods and their villages. And they're showing patience. You know, last week, Evan, on the same day that we unveiled this specific list, I had the honor of going to Holly with Home Leasing, Brett Garwood, Nelson Leinhouts, for a ribbon cutting with Lieutenant Governor on Holly High School, which appeared on our very first list and is now affordable senior housing. That building was vacant for 45 years, kind of in the shadow of the synagogue, which has been vacant for almost 60 years. So it seems like those are insurmountable obstacles, but history has shown that they're not. And we're just really excited about this year's list. We think it's unique, and we think it's very engaging.
Congratulations on this. I know it's hard work. Thanks for sharing the story of the Five to Revive 2020 with us. That's Wayne Goodman, the executive director of the Landmark Society of Western New York. Always nice to talk to you, Wayne. Some point in the future, I'll see you again, but nice to talk to you, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And Brad Huber is a member of the Five to Revive committee. Thanks for the insight this hour, Brad.
Thank you for having me.
Good, hard work happening in many communities across Western New York. Maybe I'll go by the local hardware store this afternoon on the way home. Rob Braden is the engineer of Connections. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We will talk to you Tuesday on member-supported public radio.